It's also my privilege to take a few moments to talk with you about Kenya. You remember that last spring we had another trip to Kenya, and some of us came back and reported on that. We have had an almost 10-year relationship with Kenya and the community of Kitale in particular. It started with a relationship with Daniel and Marlies Huchteling, and they gathered around them two couples, Wilson and Alice, who will be here in a couple of weeks, and Mwangi and Pauline. Well, this is going to take longer than I thought. And so we've wanted to bring Mwangi and Pauline together. Initially we tried, but we've wanted to bring someone from that leadership team here to understand what's happening here at River of Life, but also, more importantly, that you might meet them and understand the quality of people that we work with. And so it's a great privilege to call Mwangi to and have you welcome him, the director of Youth Apart in Kenya. There you go.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Still morning.
Yes, still morning.
Kind of confused the time-wise here. It's an honor and pleasure to be standing in front of you this morning. Thank you very much for the invitation and also hosting us here, hosting me here in Lethbridge. Receive greetings from my dear family in Kitale. I'm married, have one wife, Pauline. Her name is Pauline. We lead the ministry with her. We have a son called Esaf and a daughter called Joy. And also greetings from the girls and the staff at the Esther home, and everyone at the children's home and the staff there.
So the ministry in Kitale has four main components. And so as we sort of talk about those different components, there'll be some pictures that we'll just scroll through. And if you want to know what picture attaches to what part of things, I'll explain where you can do that later. But the thing that we're most familiar with is the Esther home, which is a residential home for teenage moms and their babies. So, Mark, can you tell us a little bit about what's happening at the Esther home right now?
Thank you. Yeah, the Esther home is going on quite well. The girls are continuing with their studies very well, both at school and also at the home, where they are taught on handiwork in terms of bead making. They're taught a bit on tailoring. And definitely, being a farming region, teach them a bit about horticulture in the greenhouses. So, and other than that, we've noticed that, you know, we can't continue setting up more and more Esther homes. So one of the ways to reduce the intake of girls that we have is to make sure that we go out to the society through our social workers and the people at the Esther home. So they are continuing going to the schools and talking to teachers, especially the female teachers, and to other girls, the young girls in schools, to help them know how they can, you know, how we can reduce the number of teenage pregnancies that we are having in the community at large. Other than that, we've had three more girls come in the recent past. All of them have given birth already. And so all of them were rescued from families that were abusive families, and one was rescued from a slum. And all of them, I can say that right now we've seen the progress. They're having a very good progress, and they've all given birth as of now.
And so it's been great joy to go to the Esther home over several different years and to see the transformation of what happens in a loving, supportive, caring environment. Had a great time with the five-year-old boys when we were there in the spring. It's just really beautiful atmosphere at the home. You also recall that in April, the team spent significant time in the schools. School ministry is an important part of what you do there. What kinds of things are happening in the schools?
Yeah, for us, our passion is the youth. And one of the areas that we can get the youth is in schools. We are grateful that, you know, in our nation that we are allowed to go into the schools to minister to the kids, to the students in ways that we can. So we are still doing school ministry, and over the years it has been very successful, and we've seen a lot happening. The ways that we do this is, you know, in some schools we'll go, if we have enough time, go with a sound system, set up the sound system, and maybe use drama to minister to the kids, and use music, because all over the world the youth love music, so we'll just use contemporary Christian music and reach out to the young people in our schools. And that has been going on quite well, and we thank God that He's opening more and more doors. So in the coming months, after the, right now they're having their most, in most schools they're having their end of term exams. After that we'll be going back to the schools.
And Youth Depart also runs two orphan homes in that area. Tell us a little bit about the children there.
The kids are doing well in the orphan, in the orphanages, in the orphanages. There are two basic, we have two children's homes. And we prefer doing small scale rather than the mass rescue format of children's home, whereby that we have 12 kids in one home and a pair, a dad and a mom, which definitely it's a married couple. In both homes they are doing quite well. One home is 8 hours away from Kitale. That home, the kids started going into that home quite early, so most of the kids are already in high school. We are hoping that, because two of them are sitting for their Form 4 exams, we are hoping that we'll get, they'll do well and be admitted in university.
3 years ago, God arranged a connection for us through this church with Scott Rohr, who has a great combination of ministry and business experience, and he's been instrumental in a massive change that's happened in the work in Kitale over the last 3 years. And that's the addition of two business sustainability projects that have dramatically changed how the work is done there. Rather than all of the support coming from the West, there is now two businesses that are providing income for the work in Kitale. Can you tell us about those businesses?
Yeah, thank you for your support in that department. We noticed that, you know, to replicate what we are doing, we also have to get more resources, and one of the ways was doing business, sustainability businesses that are supporting the work that we are doing. Being in a region that we are blessed with good soils, we decided to put up greenhouses so that we can do tomato farming and definitely horticulture farming. So we did that, and we have set up 5 greenhouses where we are, in the meantime that we are growing in some of the greenhouses, the produce that we are growing in the greenhouses and out of the greenhouses, we are able to sell to the market around us. And also we've become the suppliers for some of the best hotels in Kitale town. And other than that, for the horticulture that also we have, be it kales, spinach, or tomatoes, we are able to send to, because Kitale is surrounded by dry areas like Turkana and Pokot and Kisumu, so we are able to sell that to those regions. The second sustainability business that we started was the tourism business. Being a Christian ministry, we get a lot and lots of teams coming. And also there are times that we get people who are coming to the country for visiting homes and also doing ministry teams, be it ministering in churches or what, but also that we want them to see a bit of our country, being one of the, according to us, our statistic, being one of the most beautiful countries in the world. So we want them to, you know, sample our beaches, sample our wildlife, because after all, you're already in Kenya, and it's not far to do that. So we started a tourism business called Migration Trackers and Safaris, and we have packages whereby you can come into the country, maybe visit the Esther home. Be in the Esther home, do a project there, and minister to the girls, or maybe come and go to the school's ministry with us. And on your way out of the country, before we take you to the airport, you can pass into one of the national parks that we have, or you can go to the coast and, have some good time before you come back to Canada. So we've been doing that, and it's been going on quite well.
And so that's a perfect way to start international travel, if you haven't done that, to combine some ministry with some vacation, and do it all under the good care of someone you know and trust. And they just take wonderful care of us whenever we go, right from the moment you step out of the airport to when you step back into the airport on your way home. and the parks are really very amazing. So, Mongi, what kind of dreams do you have as you think about the future of the work in Kenya?
As we are going on with the work, the Youth Apart Ministry, one of the things that we want to do, because we are having all these different things that we are doing, and especially for the youth ministry, which is what took me to Kitale 10 years ago to minister to the youth. One of the things that we want to do is to start a church in Kitale town where, you know, we can, everything that we are doing will be under that church. We go out and minister to lots and lots of kids in different schools, and we connect them to different schools, and when they come back, they are like, you know, where is your church? Where do you guys meet? And you are like, no, we don't have a church. We don't have a place that we are meeting. But we connect them to churches. But I guess because of the DNA that we, you know, we plant into them, they, you know, still want to be more and more connected with us. So it is in that respect that we feel called to plant a church in Kitale town. And that's the place you say amen.
So as I said, the work and our partnership with Mwangi and Pauline continues to change. As the businesses increase, that means our role changes. And so part of our goal for this time here was that you would meet Mwangi and understand why we have so much confidence in him and in, and the leadership that him and Pauline provide to the work there. We want to be able to send him home with a budget that would say, here's what's, they know what's coming in from their side. So then what might we be doing to support them and make sure that everything that needs to happen this year can run consistently all through the year? And so that means some of us partnering together with that on a monthly basis. But there are also one-time projects. What kind of projects might there be?
Right now, two of the things that we are in great need is, when we put up all the greenhouses, our desire and our plan was to, you know, run the 5 greenhouses at full capacity. This is, and the reason we do, one would ask why, you know, you are in a tropical country, why do irrigation? And for us in Kitale, our rains are seasonal. So, and for planting the horticulture, we need, water. The only water that we have is, you know, the municipal water, which we cannot use for planting tomatoes. So we have a 100-dug well, but it is not enough in that 100-dug well. We don't get enough water to run the 5 greenhouses and the outside irrigation at full capacity. So one of the greatest needs that we have right now to be able to run the 5 greenhouses and outside irrigation at full capacity is a water well. And the next thing is a biogas plant, just a small biogas plant for the home, for to be able to, you know, to cook, rather than using firewood or electricity. We rarely use electricity for cooking, just use it for lighting in Kenya. So we would want to, because on cutting down on the monthly cost, if we can put up our biogas, since we have 2 cows at the farm, then that can help us in the lighting and cooking for the girls.
So right now, cooking happens on a charcoal heater that sits on the floor in the kitchen area, which is a separate building, but there are 5 young boys running around there, not always a good combination. So some of the funds have already come in for that biogas plant. We just need to finish that so that that can be purchased. And I also had someone from our 9 o'clock service saying, that water well has my name on it. Tell me how much it is. But there are other projects, and we'd love to tell you about that. So Monday night, October 20th at 7 o'clock, we're having a smaller gathering at Lucille's house. We'd love for you to join us. If this connects with you, you'd want to talk with Mwangi, ask more questions, see more detail. We will do that next Monday at 7 o'clock. Mwangi is here for another, till the end of the month. And so you're welcome to get in touch with him or us. You want to have him at your community group. You want to just have lunch with him, those kinds of things. We'd welcome we want to make opportunity for you to meet and talk with him. Thank you very much, Mwangi.
Thank you.
So there is also a table. You perhaps saw it on your way in. The girls do a variety of bead work and so on. That is for sale at the back. Please Take advantage of that. It will be here this Sunday and next probably. Take advantage of that. There's also brochures about the work of Youth Apart and the tour business and how that works. We are part of what Mong and I will work on this week is some discussion about a trip in the spring. So that might be part of how God connects you further with this work. And so we want to just continue to raise your involvement and understanding of what's happening there. If you have your Bibles, turn back to Joshua chapter 3 and the story that began our fall, that the message that Todd brought us back a month or so ago from Joshua chapter 3 and the story of the Israelites coming to the end of a wilderness season. Of having traveled in the wilderness for 40 years, they are now on the banks of the Jordan. They can see the promised land on the other side, but the river is impassable. And the story that we focused on and has set the theme for this fall, we find in those first verses of Joshua chapter 3. At the end of 3 days, the officers went through the camp and commanded the people, as soon as you see the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God being carried by the priests, then you shall set out from your place and follow it. Yet there shall be a distance between you and it, about 2,000 cubits in length. Do not come near it, in order that you may know the way you shall go, for you have not passed this way before. Then Joshua said to the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. And so we have spent the last weeks with those two instructions foremost in our minds, that we want to follow the ark as it moves, that as the Spirit of God moves forward, we want to be aware and follow in behind, because we have not moved from wilderness into promise before, that there's something of a new season that God is introducing for us as a church, but also individually. And so the way to enter that new season is to follow the move of the Spirit. And so we continue to share stories and hear stories of God making passable what was impassable only a few weeks ago. But the second instruction was to consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. And so that raises expectation in our hearts. Our faith is lifted as we think, yes, God is about to move. And we anticipate seeing God move in ways that we have prayed for, that he would move in areas that we have not known what to do with, but that we would see wonders of God in our lives and in our community. And so we want to grasp a hold of those things, and it's very good. But I want to focus our attention on the idea of consecration, because frankly, the instruction seems a little bit strange to me. Why would you say to a bunch of Israelites who have followed the Lord for 40 years in the desert, consecrate yourselves? Aren't they already pretty consecrated? They have been following a cloud and a pillar of fire by night for 40 years. They have eaten manna every morning for breakfast for 40 years. They are literally eating from God's hand. When the cloud stops, they set up their camp. First comes the tabernacle, and then everyone camps around the tabernacle. The presence of God resting over the ark is central to everything they do. And everything that has happened over those 40 years has been to form them into a people of God. They sound very consecrated. So why fresh instruction to consecrate? What about a new season demands new consecration? Because we are also a very consecrated people. You are the most dedicated disciples that I've ever walked with. It's a great joy. On every turn, I see people who are taking their healing journey seriously, who are discipling others, who are concerned about their communities, who are walking well with their children. It's a beautiful place. But the same message comes to us. Consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. And so what do we mean by that? What do we expect is going to happen if we're going to consecrate something? What does that look like? What did the people of Israel do that night before the ark started to move? Did they have a prayer vigil? People came out? Or did they just pack? Was it that simple? Okay, we're going across. I don't need that anymore. Bring an extra coat. Or perhaps there was just some formal ceremony. They said, come out just before sundown. We'll have a consecration ceremony. Someone said, we're gathered here today in the presence of God to consecrate you for the journey ahead. And everybody said, yeah, that's good. Because that is how we tend to think about consecration. That is a one-time event. That I could look back on my baptism at 16 in 1976, and that was a consecrating moment for me. I said, if I'm going to walk this way, this Christian walk, I want to do it well. And I think the way I can signify that for myself is to take the step of baptism. So it was a step of consecration for me. Is that all up? Am I done? I did it back then. Or is it more of a lifestyle than an event? Is it something that gets walked out over time, and is some of your consecration yet to happen? I think it's like that. And that over the next couple of chapters in the book of Joshua, there are four examples of what consecration looks like, how it was walked out by the Israelites. Turn to chapter 5. Four quick pictures of what happened in those early days on the other side of the Jordan. Chapter 5 and verse 4. And this is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All of the males of the people who came out of Egypt, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness on the way after they came out of Egypt. Though all those people who had come out had been circumcised, yet all the people who were born on the way in the wilderness after they came out of Egypt had not been circumcised. So there was a dramatic consecration ceremony early in the 40-year journey. But in the new season, new consecration was required because the next generation had to own their consecration for themselves. They could not count on the decision of their fathers that said, yes, we will be the people of God. They had to own it themselves. They had to make their own choice. They had to stand up and make a very personal, direct commitment that they would enter into the sign of the covenant that God had instituted with Abraham. And it's the same for us. Consecration means we have to own it for ourselves. That you might be relatively new to this congregation. And if we are going to build a glorious church, if we're going to see the move of God in a glorious way, we need all of us together to own that this place is consecrated to God, but we all have to own it. We all have to make a commitment to it. That it's not something that's held by Todd and the elders. And we'll just cheer them on and say, yeah, I'm up for that. That's good. No, we have to own it. And so that might look like different things. If the journey of faith is new to you, it might look like the step of baptism. That's something that we'll talk more about in the coming weeks. But that you might say, yes, I want to own. In this new, I know that God is calling me to consecrate myself, to own this decision, to walk this journey well. If you're new to this church, it might look like becoming a member of this church. To stopping by and looking at the poster at the back that talks about the home church commitment. That's what consecration and owning a part of what River of Life is, that's what that looks like. And so we invite you to come along on this journey and to own what God is about to do. Skip down to Joshua 5 and verse 11. The day after the Passover, on that very day they ate the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. And the manna ceased the day after they ate of the produce of the land. And there was no longer manna for the people of Israel, but they ate of the fruit of the land of Cana that day. 40 years of breakfast home delivery. 40 years. And if you're the person in your household that's responsible to make breakfast, you get into a little bit of a routine about how you make breakfast. You get up, you get out, you collect some manna, you know how much your family needs. You bring it in, you prepare it, and they eat. And so now you're across the Jordan. And you celebrate the Passover. And you have a grape and an unleavened cake. And without warning, delivery stops. There's no warning. You take one bite of the promised land, and the provision that has lasted you for 40 years is gone. That's going to mess up some households. What happens in your household when you're out of milk unexpectedly? It messes up the morning. In a new season, consecration looks like leaving past provision. That there is some ways that God provided for you in the wilderness that will not continue in the new season. How did God provide for you in this past season? And is there a shift going on in that provision where you need to leave some things behind in order that you might be ready to receive in the new season? The new season will require space for some new things. That means laying down some things, good things, but making room for that. Not constantly adding and then wondering why I can't keep up. I've been a year-long struggle about God's provision through friendship. And that almost all my life, I have told my story with reference to some very specific friendship that were God's provision to me consistently year over year over year. And in the last year, those friendships have changed. And I've been grumpy. I've been out looking for manna, and there's no manna. And I've felt guilty because maybe I'm doing something wrong. How come the friendship has changed? I've been mad. How come they can't be like they used to be? And I've come to the conclusions that I'm not leaving the friendship, but there is a place and time to lay down some things and leave some things behind, because it's not how God's going to provide in this new season. Because I realized over the summer, as I tried to wrestle some of this through, that I'm not lacking. That in fact, the things that those friendships used to provide are still being provided. But I'm standing over here saying, come on, bring it. And it's sitting over here. But I'm facing this way and can't see it. That I, at some point, I have to leave this so that I can move to this. Thirdly, there's an issue of submission. Joshua 5 and verse 13. When Joshua was by Jericho, so the first city to conquer in the new land, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua said to him, are you for us or for our adversaries? And he said, no, I am the commander of the army of the Lord. Now I have come. And Joshua fell on his face to the ground and worshipped and said, what does my Lord say to his servant? And the commander said, take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy. So to understand the significance of this moment, you need to understand and remember that Joshua was one of the 12 spies in the first 40 days. Remember Todd saying, a 40-day journey turned into a 40-year journey. Joshua is in the group in the first 40 days that went into the land and said, this is one amazing promised land. And 10 of the spies said, it's amazing, but we don't have a hope. And they carried the day. And only 2 voices spoke for God and said, no, we can do this. This is our destiny. God will make it possible. And so what has 40 years looked like for Joshua? He is a warrior. He is ready to conquer the land. He tasted of the land. He believed for victory in that land, and he waited for 40 years in punishment for other people's sin and disbelief. How many battle strategy planning sessions do you think he had in 40 years? How many sessions did he take of saying, how am I going to train warriors of this new generation? How do I prepare them for this little glimpse that I've seen of the land? All the plans he made, all the things he did for 40 years, waiting in faith that one day God would give him what he had promised. And what happens before he can do one battle? He has to submit it all to the commander of the Lord's army. So some of us have waited a long time. But we at best, at this point in a new season, recognize that there is a commander of the Lord's army, and no matter what your role is, it needs to be submitted to him. That what this is about is not Todd's purpose or the elder's purpose or River of Life or your needs or even the needs of this nation. It's about God's will and his purpose and what he's doing and what he's moving on. And it all needs to be submitted to him. And that our posture that we've learned well of dependence and humility must remain in the new season. That what we are about to embark on is a holy venture. And that in the wilderness, where there's a pillar of fire by night, we know where God is. We just have to look around and we'll see him. But there are all kinds of new distractions in the place of promise. New adventures with God, new opportunities. We have not walked this way before. And we best deal with the question of who's in charge at the beginning. Consecration looks like submission. That reverence and humility and careful attention to what God is doing is needed now more than ever. And then finally turn to chapter 6 and verse 19. So they get to Jericho, and we all know the stories of marching around the walls of Jericho. I just want to read two verses, starting at verse 19. So 7 days walking around the city. The final day, this is the day of victory for the people of Israel. And this is what, in the midst of all the instructions about how this day is going to go, this is what God says. Verse 19, but all the silver and gold, every vessel of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord. They shall go into the treasury of the Lord. So the people shouted and the trumpets blew. And as soon as the people heard the sound of the trumpet, they shouted a great shout and the wall fell flat so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they captured the city. Consecration looks like giving. That if you've been on the road, just think about holidays this summer. And you came back, and you got to Calgary. You've been on the road for 2 weeks. What are you thinking about when you get home? My bed. Tonight is my bed. I'm going to make coffee how I want to make coffee, not like Holiday Inn makes coffee. What's it like after you've been on the road for 40 years? What are you thinking about? Cooking in the same place more than 3 nights in a row. A bed that's not just rolled out on the ground. Something that you could leave for a while. All kinds of needs and desires that you have waited for 40 years. And the first place where you get to go, and maybe you could find some of the things that you've done without for 40 years. And what does God say? The first and the best all goes to me. The first and the best all is devoted and consecrated to the treasury of the Lord. This is a lesson we need to understand. That in a new season, if we do what we do at the beginning will set the tone for the season. And giving will set the right tone. Interesting that this, I should be asked to talk about this on Thanksgiving Sunday. Because growing up in Coaldale, I was in a church that was primarily farmers. Probably 90% of those folks were farmers. And Thanksgiving marked for them, if not the end of their harvest, at least an indication of what harvest was like. And Thanksgiving offerings in that church were amazing. My dad was the offering counter, and so Sunday afternoons, he would bring that home, and we would help him count it. And we never did Thanksgiving dinner Sunday, because it was going to take all afternoon to count that offering. Because those people understood something about first fruits, and about giving first to God, and then to themselves. Now we're, for the most part, not farmers. And so that idea of first fruits gets complicated really quickly, and I actually don't have an answer for you about what that means. Because what's the first thing for you? Is it the first paycheck? It's hard to know what that means. And if you haven't had a paycheck for a while, how are you giving the first one to God? I don't know. I don't have an answer for you there. But the instruction is clear that consecration looks like giving. That consecration is not a lofty pronouncement and a nice prayer from the bishop. It's very practical and very hands-on. And it starts with the best. All the silver, gold, bronze, and iron. Everything else was destroyed. They got nothing. Everything from the city was either destroyed or given to God. That whole conquest, that whole first city, was all God's. But we dare not ignore this, because where our treasure is, our heart will be also. And if our heart is going to stay in the right position over this season, giving must be a part of how we enter this new season. So as Dave and the team come, I just want to ask you what's been happening in this new season. What has been stirring in your life over these last 4 weeks? And how does consecration fit into those things? Where are you being asked to own this new season? That too often we confuse enthusiastic support for engagement. And we'll sit quietly on the side and cheer and yell and be really excited about anything, but we're not actually on the field and engaged. We're not a participant. Owning it means you'll be a participant. What does that mean for you? What does it look like for you to engage fully in this new season? The beginning of the season is the ideal time for you to join us and grab hold of this thing that God is giving us and help us to walk it forward. That there are some things, as you fully engage, there will be some things that God is asking you to lay down. That last season's provision will be this season's sacrifice. That you will put it on the altar. And you will say, God, I give this over to you and allow you to do it differently. To put some things down. And then to submit your hopes and dreams for this new season, the things that you most have asked for, submit it to what God is doing on a much larger scale. That Joshua saw all that could happen with his army, but there was a commander of the army of the Lord on an unseen realm. God was doing something that Joshua had no idea of. And then will you ask God, what does it mean for the first and the best to go into his treasury? If our first priority is that we would see a move of the Spirit, doesn't it make sense that your accountant should be able to see that somehow? That it should be reflected in your daytimer. in some way. And that we would start with placing that in the correct order right from the beginning. Dave.
Why don't you stand with us?